Hi folks, welcome to another edition of Gold Bazan. Myself, Bob Akegoldri, Sinai Sami, and Pejman Pars, all directors of Gold Bazan, will be doing an analysis of Iran versus Syria match. We're very delighted that we're going to have two guests on for this pod, Mahdi Rahimi, which he runs a fantastic website for Iranian football fans, and Ari Aloverdi. Ari is a huge diehard Team Mendy fan and is also doing his coaching in Scotland. And interesting enough, how many people could say they have a Scottish accent and they're Iranian? So definitely tune into that. That segment is going to be towards the end of the pod. And if for any Team Mendy football fan that is interested to join us, definitely shoot us an email or find us on Twitter or Facebook. Or just shoot us a message and we'll definitely would love to have you on. A lot of people have shown interest. It's just very hard to, you know, balance everything. But definitely, if you're very interested, just let us know. Everybody's more than welcome to join. And also, as I've said it, we're looking at building a website for Gold Bazan. We're in the process of doing that. And shout out to Ehsan. Another huge Gold Bazan fan has been helping with us. But nonetheless, we're also looking for a graphic designer for anybody that's looking to boost their CV or whatnot. Definitely shoot us a message for that. And as always, we appreciate the support you've been giving us. And we're just going to keep leading great content leading up to the World Cup. And as always, thank you. Right now, joined with the panel. How's everybody doing today? And we have a special guest all the way from Austria, Mahdi. Mahdi, is obviously a pleasure to have you on. Obviously, for Bob X May, we're definitely looking forward to your viewpoints. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Good.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Good to speak to you as always.
All right. Well, let's get started. So obviously today we just want to talk about the analysis match of Iran's performance versus Syria. I'm always pretty surprised myself that it was a very, very strong lineup from Queiroz, very attack-minded. First off, coming off, would you see him? Is that what you expected? And or were you surprised that he didn't, like, for example, start somebody else that you wanted him to start?
I mean, the previous podcast when we spoke about the game against Syria, we all sort of agreed that there will be changes in the lineup since it is a meaningless game. It'll be at home and it's the second game in the international break, and it would be a good opportunity to try a few new players or just to rotate the squad. But yeah, I was kind of surprised that he went with his first choice starting 11. I was expecting to see Ptolemy starting against South Korea. But now that he started against Syria, I feel like he rested him in that game, specifically for the game against Syria. So he was back in the lineup. But I think the most surprising thing for me was the back four that Ansari continued to start against Syria. I'm not sure how fit Hosseini was, but I think he was part of the squad. He was training, so I was kind of expecting him to be involved. But of course, Queiroz chose not to. And of course, Osman coming back from suspension, he was back in the lineup and he kind of repaid that with the two goals.
Babak, I mean, Sina just pinpointed about the partnership between Purali Genji and Ansari. And obviously, we're going to get into more specifics of that partnership that obviously was, in my eyes, not the best again. Was there any notable changes that you saw from Queiroz besides that you think that potentially somebody else could have slotted in as an experimental, or especially that again he started Taremi on the left wing?
To be honest, like Sina, I was a little bit surprised. I thought there would be a bit more rotation. Poor Ali Genji and Ansari, again, it didn't look like something was right between them. The chemistry probably wasn't there. We mentioned this about the Korea game as well, but the fact that there wasn't so much depth, he called up Izzetullah Purgaz and he came on in the second half. So that suggests to me that Ansari is one of the big losers from these two games, because he didn't convince and he was subbed off in the 54th or 55th minute, which is not what you'd expect for your center back. So that needs working on. Maybe Hosseini comes back in, or he might be looking at other potential players. Taremi coming back in, not so surprising. He's had good performances during the whole qualification. Central midfield again. El Said was suspended.
Back, one question to you and Sina both as well. Do you think that Ansari more or less blew his chances to be a part of the national team, or at least a starter? Because two games, that kind of poor performance, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was my instinct. And I said, for me, if I had to pick two or three big losers from these two games, Ansari would be probably at top of the list, although it's a little bit unfair because he's thrown in against South Korea for his debut. That's not an easy game. And then against Syria at home, a few changes. Probably if he started next to Hosseini, it could have been easier for him. So I think, yes, he probably did. And if we've looked at the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen Queiroz has tried a lot of different players at centre-back, people coming in for one or two games and then being put aside. Purgas was one of them as well, but he's back into the picture again. So, yeah, I think the main thing I took from the game was there's a lot of work to be done between now and the World Cup.
Also, I think one thing that Ansari has going for him is the fact that he can play in two or three different positions in the back four. So I think that that's the versatility and flexibility that he has. I think that's the best point about him. Again, I'm unsure about him starting with Puran Genji anyway, as Bobak mentioned. I think it would have been better if he started next to his club mate in Jalal Hosseini, because I feel like even Puran Genji needs a bit of guidance himself when he plays for Team Ali. But again, I mean, in the last World Cup, we saw a player like Ahmad Odeneme, who was part of the squad, who isn't a special player at all, but he was a squad player who could play in two or three different positions, very similar to Mohamed Ansari, left-footed. He could play centre-back and left-back. So I feel like Ansari will be that player in the squad. I'm not 100% sure if he will be going to the World Cup, but I think it's too early to rule him out yet.
Peshwan, I want to ask you about the midfield before I pass it on to Mahdi's for him to talk about the front four for the match against Syria. What did you make out of the partnership between Ali Karimi and Haj Sefi, especially considering that, you know, he took off Ali Karimi and brought in Çeşmi? I don't know if that was for an injury or just he felt like Ali Karimi wasn't playing to the best of his capabilities, but now even though he just recently signed with his former club, a club that he pretty much grew up with, what did you make out of that partnership, considering Said Azatolay was suspended?
Yeah, well, we kind of bashed Said for the game against South Korea and his stupid mistake. But after looking after the Syrian game, I do believe that we maybe should have, we needed at least somebody like Azatolay there. Although his he haven't played any games in Russia so far, but for me, I prefer to see him right now, Azatolay and Haj Sefi together. Somehow, I think the reason Azatolay have been playing all the games for Queiroz is that he's a really good listener. And when he does play well, he really does play well. Like the games against Uzbekistan, he was great, you know, but I think he needs guidance. And coming back to your question, Karimi, Haj Sefi, I think it went so. I mean, the Syrians, they didn't have any problems to penetrate the Iranian midfield, at least for 20 minutes, first 20 minutes. But then again, it wasn't, you can only blame those two guys. They used the Iranian wings kind of easy, and they knew how to come from both sides. But I think that trio with Haj Sefi, Karimi, and Azatolay would be two out of three would be starting and in the World Cup. So probably Haj Sefi and Azatolay. But I think we need some depth there, maybe in Omid Ebrahimi or someone like him.
Mahdi, I wanted to speak to you about the front four. On paper, obviously, Sardar Azmoun has secured his spot on the right wing. Adil Zajanbaj has secured his spot. again, Ashgana Dejaga started at 10, and for me, honestly, I felt like he had a good performance despite he's not played for a club yet. But the issue we also have at number 10 is that he's not a traditional number 10, as the boys have always been discussing. He doesn't have the legs for it, you know, he's without a club. But it still shows you how much Kerish has trust with him. On the other hand, on the left wing, so Taremi is not even a left wing, but he still has been slotting in there. That's another position that is up for grabs, as Vahid Amiri didn't make it for himself. What do you make out of that? And do you potentially see Saman Gudus filling that slot?
I mean, I honestly don't know if he wants to play four in the front or just three in the front between the midfield coming forward for the World Cup, to be honest with you. And then, you know, it depends. Do you want someone on the left who goes in or provides goal or just makes the field, gives adds width to the team? So I guess it depends in that regard. I think honestly, the front three, like three of the front four, if you want to, are set. Mm. I think we will go there with Taremi, Osman, and Jaumbach. Mm-hmm. The thing about Dejaga, I mean, yeah, you said it. He's not a 10. He's just a guy who has basic fundamental football skills, if you want to. But he just, I mean, he has been with the team for a long time. I think Kerish is this type of coach who just relies on his soldiers, if you want to, speaking. So I think he knows about the problems we have going forward for the 10 position, also for a player linking midfield and attack, or like, you know, being some sort of creative player in midfield. So I think the Koros addition, we will see how much he gets to play. I think Shojai is still in the books. I don't think Kirosh himself will play Dejaga as a 10, but will just carry him with him. So these are my thoughts about it. But I think, like, more or less the idea of who's going to be like the forward line is kind of set.
So do you think, Matty, that... I feel this as well, that depending on the draw, if we have tough games in that group, we could be seeing us revert to a three in the midfield and sacrifice the number 10.
Yes, that's basically... I mean, look, honestly, I also think, like, the reason... Like, I mean, we basically played the full 11, like first 11 squad. Like, we played the strongest squad. You could argue that this was because Kirosh wanted to... you know, not that it be seen like overthrowing the game, but it could also be, you know, the team obviously played a little bit more expensive than before. So Iran will go to the World Cup I mean, I think our team and the depth of the team is fine, but like obviously in some spots, midfield most importantly, we will have problems. And again, it will be really depending on who the teams will be, we will face. So I think Kairos right now is just trying to, you know, see how his options are and where he will obviously still have things to change and fine-tune, obviously.
Right. Well, I just want to keep it at this topic before we move on to talk about the team performance. Babak, obviously, Matthew, and something that I was saying beforehand was... Potentially, I was seeing in my eyes that we're going to play a 4-3-3, basically a three-man midfield. Right now, with the situation with Saeed Azatullahi, how do you see that unfolding if Kerish was going to play with a three-man midfield going down to Russia?
I personally would like to see us experiment with a three-man midfield. We haven't done that throughout the whole qualification campaign. Right. You could argue that, yes, playing with a number 10 means we're more expansive, we're potentially more attacking in this group, but for the World Cup, I don't think this midfield is going to cut it. Between the two of them, between Masoud and Dejaga, I would start Masoud at this moment in the number 10. He's been decent recently. I mean, he has his critics, but we don't have another player who could do that role. But I would like to see how we could play with Saeed, with Haji Safi and a third player. Who that third player is right now, yeah. I can't put my finger on him. Karimi, Çeşmi came on. He had an impact on the game. Does he have the quality to start in the World Cup? I'm not so sure. Could we find another centre-back to partner with maybe Hosseini and then Pour Elegancı moves up? I don't know. There's a lot of questions to be had. It's difficult to see, but I think we need to work with a three-man midfield between now and next June if we're going to have any chance of progression.
Right. Now let's talk about the team performance. Coming off with you, Pejman. For me, honestly, just two words, the whole entire match, and a player that is aging but is shown to be such a vital player for us, again, is Jalal Hosseini. Both Morteza, Pour Elegancı, and Ansari were all over the place, you know. In my eyes, I felt like Iran was sort of disrespecting Syria. It didn't seem like the players were taking him as seriously with the goals conceded and whatnot. Now, looking, coming off back of that with Jalal Hosseini, of the crucial player he is, and with this team performance, and with the lack of depth we have, what did you make out of team performance-wise, and where do you see this situation unfolding with Jalal Hosseini and with the lack of centre-backs?
It's kind of worrying. I mean, okay, sure, Iran was already qualified, and Syria, they had all to play for and so, but when we play against better teams, that will take advantage of the rookie mistakes and the kind of amateur mistakes that the Iranians make, you will get punished. So I agree with the fact that Hosseini is much more needed than we probably understand. And I mean, just look at actually both games, both the South Korea games and the Syria game. Iran lost several duels in their own turf, I mean, in their own penalty area, with heads. Iranian players are usually really good in defense with heading off the ball, but they lost several of them, and that's not something that we're used to when Hosseini is running the ship, because Hosseini, he's a beast, he's a giant in the air, and he won't let anybody dictate what to do. He dictates the other players and tells them what to do. Mm-hmm. We kind of missed that player in the Iranian defense. And Pour Elegancı, he's still young. As you say, he's sometimes all over the place. Ansari, it was his first and second game in the national team. It's maybe hard to expect him to do something like that. So we lack a leader in the Iranian defense, and the Iranian defense will be challenged in the World Cup because we will play against better teams. Iran won't have, like against Syria, 60-65% of the ball. That won't happen. So I'm kind of worried, but I'm glad that these issues are coming up now and not like 1-2 months before the World Cup, because then we won't have time to do something about it. Keros have time to think about how to deal with the Iranian defense. And who knows, we maybe see a totally new face in the defense. I won't be surprised if that happens at all.
Sina, where would you say Syria basically penetrated the most and gave us the hardest of difficulties of times, possibly throughout the entire match, from your own personal viewpoint?
I think, as we discussed in the last episode, the presence of Omar Alsomer, I think, was really crucial for them. He scored the second goal, of course, and got the assist for the first goal. So shutting him down was, I mean, must have been a priority for Keyrush and his team. But Omar Alsomer, one of, if not the best striker currently playing in Asia, did his thing, and he's really difficult to play against. But as just going back to a point that Pejman made, which is comes back to the point on Alsomer, is that lack of leadership. I think that's really important. It's something that we've missed a lot. Yes, we do have a couple of captains, such as Dejogar and Masoud and even Haj Safi, but there's no characters in that team that are true leaders that can really grab a hold of a player or two and get them to be in a specific position or just communicate in the back four. I think in the past World Cup, of course, Hosseini was there, but then we had Nkunam in midfield as well. So everything was really communicated well amongst the players. But I don't feel like communication is something that this team does really well. And we could see that, to me, specifically on the long balls. I think there was a lot of confusion of who's going for the ball, who's covering. And I think that needs that's something that when you're on the pitch, the coach can't really do anything about that. It has to be the players really taking ownership and taking responsibility in those situations. I think it was very visible in the game against South Korea as well. There were moments, especially in the first half, where there was a lot of confusion in the back four and the two midfield in front of them. So I think that's something that can be helped when Hosseini plays, that he will tell his players what to do. He will command the back four, and I think that's really important.
Babak, coming off basically what Sinan Pejman said, leadership obviously is a key thing, and we definitely do need it for the World Cup. Based off what you personally think, who would you say are the leaders within our squad right now?
It's tough to say, but I would definitely say Hosseini is one. I feel that Ashkan, Masood, these are again potential leaders or our leaders. Ehsan, another one who is, mm-hmm. I think he was having his 86th international match. He's only, 26 years old maybe? 26, 27 at most. Right. Difficult to see natural leaders. Even Hosseini, as much as he's experienced, he's not as natural a leader as someone like Javod Nkunam was, a captain that you could directly say he's a captain material. Hosseini's experience, he is a leader, but he's not, for me, there's a X factor that you want in your captain, you know, and he doesn't necessarily need to wear the captain's armband. But I, like Sina, I don't see too many of those personalities in this squad. It could be because we have a very young squad as well, a lot of young players around. It's not that they don't take responsibility to players, but you somehow want to channel that in the right way to prevent people like Saeed doing something petty like he did last time. Or in this game, you had Taremi doing something stupid, which could have led to a red card as well. You want someone to keep control of the situation, keep the players calm and so forth. So it's tough to see that, but this is the squad that we have, and I don't think that something major is going to change between now and the World Cup.
Matthew, if you could basically, based off of what the guys have been saying and based off your own personal viewpoints, tell us what did you make out of Iran's performance versus Syria?
Honestly, I thought the game was okay given the circumstances. I mean, we have to put it this way. Syria was kind of playing to their teeth and like really like this was maybe their most important game in 40 years, and Iran didn't have too much to play for. But you know, coming back from going down and still, you know, finding the motivation and everything, you know, we created some chances. So I think the game was okay given the circumstances, but it also showed like the problems we have, and one is midfield, and the other one is if our defense have space behind them. I mean, the second goal was basically that. I mean, you see how much space was behind the defenders, and all of a sudden they didn't know properly how to, you know, close that space down and everything. So that's my two takeaways from the game that I would take. Otherwise, really, it's difficult to say, and I hope it doesn't get understood the wrong way. I was happy about the draw. I have very good Syrian friends. One of them was basically texting me all the time, and he said he wrote me after the game that he can't talk right now and because it's too emotional for him. So, you know, I was like, fine, you know. I was very happy with the result and with the way the game went. So I can't complain too much. But what we saw and what will be an issue for us, and it's still an issue for us if, like, our defenders or, like, the defensive line we had, if there is space behind them, that's something we can take away from.
But the question, Matty, is why in the 93rd minute, so late, and it wasn't just the 93rd minute, it even after we're up 2-1, closing down the game, we were kind of putting the people forward. We had a lot of players ahead and then a lot of space behind us. It was no discipline at all. And you could see Queiroz was frustrated about it. He wasn't so happy on the touchline, even before we conceded.
Yeah, I mean, look, one thing is, I think one of the things we have to keep in mind, like, the mid, like, you know, in such games, you usually have, like, midfield players who can control the ball well and, you know, position themselves well, and you just play the ball around and keep it, you know. So that's something we didn't have. And I mean, you see where we lost the ball. It was right side midfield, and then it was a very quick counterattack. Midfielders didn't close it down properly, and then we had this space behind the defense because they were, I don't know, doing what. So, you know, that's an issue. Does this make sense what I'm talking about, or?
No, it does. But for me, the discipline is which is, like you said, we don't have the players to stop the ball, and this is not something that would have happened when you had someone like Nekunam in midfield. Who, one of the things we used to complain about, or at least I used to complain about, was he would kill the tempo of the game so much, him and Ando, towards the end of games, or generally, and we couldn't really have expansive football. We've had much more quicker tempo football since he's retired, but then you see in moments like this, you miss that experience and calm and composure on the ball.
True. Yes, obviously, but I mean, the thing is also, you know, it's also maybe, you know, an issue of concentration or not being, like, bothered too much. I mean, I really can't say this. You have to give the team credit. I mean, in all previous games, you know, keeping how many games we won with like a 1-0 score, and, like, kept it tight in the last minute and everyone was concentrated. Maybe
that's a fair point.
This was really just a concentration point, because it's like, ah, come on, it's the 90th minute, we're leading 2-1, we are already qualified, why am I even on the field right now? I'm not saying that this is what they were thinking, but, you know, you have to keep it in mind, you know, it also coming back from a game in South Korea where we played for long stretches with 10 men and, you know, had to defend really tightly, you know. Concentration is a factor, you know, so just, I wouldn't put too much into this fact, but we have to put a lot into the fact that there is a problem in the team and from the players we have in keeping the ball, and also if the defense is exposed with space behind them, which will be a case whenever we concede first. You know, this is something that,
the next topic I want to discuss, obviously, is going to be a huge debate right now, so that'll occur, is Ayrıca Beyrönvan versus Ayrıca Hayri. In my personal viewpoint, I always thought that the reason why Beyrönvan is starting is because Hayri had issues, you know, finding a club, and when he was with Maritimo, because of a discipline there, his attitude over there, that's why Queiroz was opting for Beyrönvan. And because of the lack of competition Beyrönvan had, it didn't seem like, you know, he was too worried that he was going to lose his spot. But however, now he has to obviously look over his shoulders because of the two goals he conceded, which were both two horrible mistakes. Babak, first coming off with you, because I know you're a huge fan of Beyrönvan. what do you make out of this goalkeeping situation now? And do you think this competition that has pretty much arose again for Beyrönvan is going to make him turn into a better keeper? And would you agree with me that that potentially it was nothing to do with Beyrönvan being such a great keeper for club-wise? It was just more the fact that he had no other options in that sense to trust. Akbari is still young. Susha, I don't really think he rates him as much and whatnot.
Okay, well, for me, it's a very big positive and plus that there's an open competition between these two goalkeepers between now and the World Cup. I was disappointed that Hayri didn't start this game, but again, it falls back into the idea that Queiroz really wanted to go with the strongest 11 right now and not leave anything for experimentation. He probably wanted to take the win and the clean sheet and go continue the record. So, number one, I was surprised Hayri didn't start. Number two, yes, he made mistakes. He's got a tendency to punch the ball centrally, which is a complete no for any basic goalkeeper. You punch it out outside the box diagonally on the left or the right. The same thing with headers for defenders, but it seems our players have a tendency, even in defense, I've seen, even in this game, heading the ball straight out, which is not what you're supposed to do. And on the second goal, he didn't, it was on his near post, he didn't impose himself, he didn't spread wide enough, he didn't look like he wanted to save that ball. He just went half-heartedly towards closing the angle, let's say. So I think it's going to be interesting. One of the most important points, though, is what Pejman mentioned last time, that the Swedish league ends, I think, in October sometime and doesn't start again until March or April. That means a crucial six-month period, Haiti will potentially not have club football. And if that happens, then I'm sorry, but Beiroman again would get the nod pretty much automatically. You want your players to be playing regular football, not be rusty, have their reflexes and everything sharp. So maybe today after the game, Haiti probably has a little bit of a, he's like a little winner, let's say. He has a plus in the books, of at least in Queiroz's mind maybe, that he deserves an opportunity now. But he needs to ensure that he's playing football. And he's playing really well right now, probably his best form of club football for the last 4 to 6 weeks, let's say, in Sweden. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes.
Sina, if you could give us your thoughts.
Listen, I mean, on this podcast, we've had this discussion many times, and I've always been in Beiroman's corner. Mostly because, as you mentioned, Hayri has been unable to get a club for whatever reason, or he's been injured. And Beiroman has had an impressive few years in the last 2 or 3 years. He's had an impressive few seasons with Naft and then with Persepolis last season. But I feel like he's suffering from a bit of complacency. I mean, even for Persepolis this season, he's made mistakes. He actually gifted the same striker that scored against him in Syria, Omar Asoma, a goal when he was playing for Persepolis against Saudi Arabia's Al Ahly in the Champions League. So he hasn't been as impressive as he has been in the last couple of years. And I think it goes down to complacency, for me anyway. But look, as Bobak mentioned, and I completely agree with him, I think the winner out of all this is Hariri. I feel like these two are two completely different goalkeepers. I think with Beiroman, he's not as good of a shot stopper as Hariri is, but I feel like his decision making is better than Hariri, although his execution leaves, of course, certain questions to be asked. But I think Hariri's main weakness, as we discussed this before as well, is his decision making in particular. But I feel like when you play against bigger teams, and especially when the World Cup comes, when you're a goalkeeper playing for Carlos Queiroz's team, where the defence is so deep, there's not that much decision-making that you have to do, which is why Hayri impressed so much in the World Cup. He made some amazing saves, especially against Argentina. But when we saw him getting exposure, it was in the games where Iran were playing a bit more open, where the crosses were coming in. I feel like he's a bit unsure. Even in the World Cup, there was a few crosses coming. He was unsure whether he's going to come out or not. If you're a goalkeeper, they always tell you, if you have to make a decision. Even if it's the wrong one, you have to make a decision and stick with it. But I feel like he's a bit indecisive. But, again, I 100% agree with Bobak and what Pejman said as well in the previous podcast, that these months ahead, especially after the game against Syria, are crucial for Hariri. He has to play and he has to keep performing the way he has done in these last few games for his club in Sweden. Because Beiroman's spot is definitely up there for the taking, and Beiroman needs to have a good look at himself as well. He needs to realise that, look, yes, you are Persepolis' number one, you're playing the Asian Champions League quarter-final, semi-final, whatever, but it doesn't mean that your spot is guaranteed. I think when you look at him, there's a sense of complacency and too much confidence in him, which I think is costing him a lot. So in the months ahead, we have to, Queiroz has to try both of them, experiment, see which one works better. But in my honest opinion, when you play in the World Cup, again, depending on our group, if you're just going to play a really, really defensive game, Hariri would be a better option because he is a better shot stopper. But again, I still think Hariri needs to improve his decision making.
But Sina, I was thinking of the same thing over the last couple of days. Yes, if we're going to sit back and defend, Hariri doesn't need to make so many decisions. But if we're going to be counter-attacking, Beiravan has a throw and a half. And that's a weapon. That's like a secret weapon. And it's so precise. I think it was... Who was it he found? Was it Taremi with a long throw? I think at the end of the first half. Or maybe it was Osma. I think it was Taremi. It was precise. And if we're going to be playing deep and our opponents are going to be attacking us, that long throw and Beiravan's, let's say, offensive contribution could be a big asset.
I agree. I think that's one of the beauty of this debate is that they're two completely different goalkeepers. That you can make a list of pros and cons for each one of them and you'll have the exact opposite in each corner. So I think it gives Queiroz a very good headache, in my opinion. But Hariri has to keep playing, as I said. But I agree with you. I think certainly in my lifetime, I've never seen an Iranian goalkeeper have this good of a distribution. Usually, even if they do have a good kick on them or a good throw, they tend to, you know, throw the ball out quick or take too much time, and it's usually the wrong decisions. But Beiravan gets it right every time when it comes to distributing the ball. So again, that goes on to the debate whether you're going to go with someone who can start a counter attack and take the opponent by surprise, or just stick to your guns and then have someone who does the very basics correct. He will not make a stupid error, but when it comes to making decisions, he might be a little bit indecisive.
Pejman, I want to ask you a question. Obviously, you probably know what you're going to say. From your own personal viewpoint, if you had to choose between these starting goalkeepers, who would you fancy for Russia? Obviously, we don't know who we're going to get in the group, but also, is it true that it's only just between these two goalkeepers? You don't think that there's a possible shot that somebody maybe from the shadows could potentially give a compete amongst these players, a three-way battle race for the number one spot?
That would be Sosha Makhani then. He just went back to the Norwegian first division from the top division to Mjøndalen. He plays good there. He gets results and they like him here over there. But if I'm not mistaken, the Norwegian league is just like the Swedish league. It ends quite soon because it's simply too cold in Norway to play football over the winter. So he will try to need to find a new club as well. Maybe he will come back to Iran. That wouldn't gain him for a World Cup spot. I can see him taking a spot in the World Cup squad. Being a first goalie, I don't know. I think he should prove himself more than in Mjøndalen. It's actually not a better league than the Iranian league, the first division in Norway. Sure, it's more organized and everything like that, but you get more challenge in Iran than the Norwegian first league. So Susha could be that one. I can't see Ahmed Lak or Akhbari doing anything because they got their chances, and Akhbari, I don't think he will get called back for a long time because he had a poor performance last season, a couple of games for a Traktor, and that's enough for you to be out of the squad. And I can't see like Daniel Dovar, who haven't played a game in like ages, do anything. So it will be between Hariri and Beiravan. Today, I would actually choose Hariri, but Beiravan has got now a couple of months, 4, 5, 6 even, to prove himself and prove to Queiroz and to everybody that he's a decent keeper that can learn how to improve and not make those mistakes over and over again. So it's a interesting battle. And one more thing I have to say, just shortly, about the leader in the defense. Hariri, although not being able to speak Swedish, the games I've seen for him in AC Eskilstuna, he's not afraid to shout against his players or shout at them, actually, and directing them. And he speaks good English and tell them what to do and when to do and how to do it. If he can do that in Sweden, then why shouldn't he be able to do that in Iran? He's experienced enough, and he's been in the in a national team, the squad, long enough to not feel afraid of taking that responsibility. In that case, Hariri is more interesting.
Peshman, sorry, I've got a quick question for you. I mean, you're closer to Hariri than most of us, and you've had conversations with him too. Knowing his previous problems in terms of finding a club when he was a free agent, how big of a possibility do you see that he can find a club to go to on loan until the Swedish Premier League starts again next season? And will his club allow him to do that?
Well, he got a contract that allows him to do that, so it won't be up to the club to decide. The thing is, he can't go to England. He said himself to me that he had offers from teams like Aston Villa, but you know, he didn't get the work permit. So if he wants to move somewhere, it will be quite hard, because first of all, he needs a decent agent. And we know that a lot of Iranian players, they maybe don't have the best advisors, or they take some not so smart decisions. But, you know, a goalkeeper isn't a player that you usually buy and let him start the week after. It's a position that you usually want to have a decent and ready player that's been in the team a lot. He can maybe find a club in the winter if another goalkeeper, like, say, in second Bundesliga or Italy or a lower team in somewhere in Europe, Belgium, Holland, I don't know, needs a goalkeeper. That would be his spot. But you have to choose very wisely where to move now. The Danish league could be a possibility, because the Danish is like the rest of Europe. They play autumn and spring, so to speak, and during the winter, you know. So maybe he goes to a top club in Denmark, or any club in Denmark. That's near Sweden, so he can still be living here in Scandinavia. Yeah.
Mahdi, if you could give us your thoughts about the situation between Bayramdan and Hayri, and which one do you personally prefer?
I don't see this thing with Sweden as too big of an issue, honestly, because I mean, the World Cup is when? It's in June. He will have played like 3 months with his team in the Swedish league, Allsvenskan again.
But he doesn't have a contract for next season. Maybe AFC Eskilstuna wants to extend his contract.
If it doesn't have a contract, then that's not an issue. If it doesn't have a contract, obviously I would prefer Bayramdan. I can't really say I have no real opinion on this, but I think it will be a matter of who will get to the World Cup in better form. That's all I can say, really. I really don't have a strong opinion on this that I'm really partisan about, to put it this way. I think both have their deficiencies and both have their strengths in a way that you guys have explained before. And we have to again look at, I mean, if we're gonna have a defense, if we're gonna have a group where we can expect lots of shots on goals, maybe Hariri. If we're gonna have a, yeah. So I'm really not having a strong opinion on this, to be honest.
So the next topic we want to discuss before we wrap it up is obviously the road to Russia with the friendlies that are coming up. A few people from social media have given us their questions, which you guys have answered them. But coming back to this, that relates to, you know, this topic, one of the questions we have is, before we get into the gist of things, it's which player is likely to captain Team Melli at the World Cup? I'm going to start it off with you again, Mahdi.
Yes?
As someone from social media has asked the question, which player is likely to captain Team Melli at the World Cup?
Captain Team Melli at the World Cup? Yeah. I really think it will be, if he plays, it's going to be Jalal Hosseini or Masoud Shojaei, one of these two. I think they will be the choices. Otherwise, maybe Hajj Safi. So these are my three choices. But if he's going to be a starter, then Jalal Hosseini, probably. My guess.
Bob Axino Peshman, do you guys have anything to add?
I think that's more or less the same candidates we would all go for. I would give it to Hosseini if he's playing as well.
Okay. I think I agree with the guys, but again, with the games that Hosseini has played, he hasn't been captain. It's been Masoud Shojaei or Dejaga. So I would think it's between the captaincy would be between those two players.
We have two more questions I'm going to ask. I'm going to start off with you, Sina, because I think you might have a better idea. A question that we have is, are bench warmers like Harami and Azatoui really the best midfielders Iran has to offer?
Yes. I don't think, I mean, we discussed this before. Yeah. There's not that many options that we can go to at this moment of time. Of course, Azatoui has got his loan move to Amkar, I think it is, if I remember correctly, from Rostov. So he'll be hopefully be playing regularly this season. And as you mentioned, Karimi has gone back to Sepahan and he'll be playing there. So they wouldn't be bench warmers. They'll be playing regular football. But whether we can do better or not, yes, of course, we could do with someone like Nekunov. I think Nekunov, if he was on his peak, I think he would be perfect for a team like this. But again, you know, in my opinion, these are the players that we have. There is Omid Ebrahimi as well, but I don't feel like this system and the way that Kerush plays really suits his abilities. I don't feel like he has been influential whenever he has played, and we tend to criticise him whenever he does play, and rightly so, because he's usually one of our... he doesn't perform up to his abilities, let's just say. So at this moment, yeah, I would think it's between Azatoulahi and Karimi, although we have seen Çeşmi as well playing the last two games. I don't think he will be a starter in the World Cup, but Kerush has surprised us before.
Pejman, final question we have is, and who should start at centre-back if Hosseini will not be included in the future? And obviously, Montazeri is at right now, so is it still going to be... it's probably definitely going to be Mortaza, but who would you think is going to be the other centre-back?
Is that a Twitter question?
Yes.
And who's asking that question?
Some person by the name of that Rob Seen.
Okay, Rob Seen?
Yeah, Rob Seen.
I don't know if Ezatola Pulgas will be that one, or we'll get a surprise name that we haven't seen in the squads that much. Shoja Khalilzadeh, is he a defender? I do believe he is.
Yeah, definitely not, though. He's he makes a lot of mistakes. 9 out of 10 times he's reliable, and then he has that one mistake in him which will definitely cost you the game. So I would stay away from him.
Yeah, maybe Ruzbe Çeşmi, he can actually play in that position as well. That's a possibility. Maybe if I wouldn't say Buria Ghafouri, he doesn't play that position quite well, and he's actually on the right side more. So we have to see. But there are a couple of names, no strong ones, and that could be a major problem for us in the World Cup. But that's fun.
Babak, obviously it's going to be a long road to Russia, with Kerosh probably definitely having to have a few battles with the Iranian Football Federation. However, the Russia game is confirmed, and supposedly, I don't know if it's official yet, that we're looking at Togo. I don't know if that's official yet. But so far, not a bad start, right?
Yeah, the fact that we have games, that's always a positive. So we definitely need to play, I think it's 7 or 8 games between now and the World Cup. We need to play against European, African, I don't know if North American size probably as well, South American side. We need to play against all types of sides from different continents. We need the experience, we need the confidence of knowing we can go head to head with these guys and we can get results. That's the most important, let's say, factor when it comes to Japan and Korea over the years. And the reason why I still think that, yes, okay, we're beating Korea these days, but teams like Japan, Australia, Korea, they're accustomed to beating countries from other continents regularly. And that's what gives them the edge against us. We don't have that experience. We don't have that track record. Mm-hmm. So we need to get that under our belt. I think we need to experiment with maybe three-man midfield and neglect the number 10 in some of the games. I would definitely invest some time in doing that. Of course, we're going to probably see some defenders coming in and center-back, maybe another central midfield combination. The front four, or three of the front four at least, more or less make up the numbers themselves. I think Sardar should be our number 9 or the focal point of the attack. I said before that anyone can lose their spot, but Sardar Azmoun is the one really high-quality player who we need in top form. He can win games on his own. He's got an instinct for goals. He's good in the air. He can link up well. And then he's got a poacher's instinct, like I saw someone calling him the Inzaghi of Iran during the game. So we need him to be playing at his best. And I think another question which Kayrosh needs to answer is, how do we get the best of Alireza Jahanbakhsh for Iran? I don't think any of us can say we've seen him playing the same way he plays for his club in Holland. We need to find a way to get him to perform for us or influence the games for us in the same manner he does with Azed. So that's another, let's say, question that needs to be worked on during these 6, 7, 8 months.
Seen, obviously, it's a pretty broad topic, but if you want to add your thoughts about what are your expectations on this road, and is there any notable player that you think that Cairo should be eyeing for a call up? I know there's a center back that recently just moved to Asia that you're rating, even Kaveh Rezaei, even though we have a huge influx of strikers already. But besides those two, is there any other notable player that you personally, even from the Iranian league?
Well, I think, if you look back at the last World Cup, a training camp that really impressed me most was a training camp that took place in South Africa. And he only took the domestic players, and his reasoning was that these players, fitness-wise, are not ready to play in the World Cup. So he took him on a training camp just to work on their fitness and also analyze them and assess which one of them can play for Iran in the World Cup. I don't know if he'll do something similar in this one. I mean, I hope he does, and I'm expecting him as well to do it. But I feel like because he has worked with these players for a longer period, maybe he wouldn't need a training camp like that. But again, it's not out of the question. But going back to the last question that you came up to me with on the questions from Twitter was the central midfield question, which ties into this one when you asked me which players from Iran, currently playing in Iran, can be part of this squad. A player that I've mentioned before, mostly because Bobak once mentioned that he likes to see a destroyer sort of midfielder to be part of this team. I've said this before, Kamal Okomie-Biniyo, who plays for Persepolis, is the only player who has that style. I'm not sure if he has the quality to be part of this team, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get to see more of him. Although he has played for the national team previously in the last stage of the qualification, he hasn't really been involved in the last few squads, mostly because of injury and also because I don't feel like his performances have been that great as they were maybe 12 to 18 months ago. Khalid Shafi'i, the player you mentioned, the centre-back who has moved to South Korea, I was expecting him to be looked at more seriously, and he might be being looked at more seriously. But again, I still have my questions about him as well. Does he have that quality to be better than Pourali Genge or Hosseini? And I feel like these are questions that can only be answered during these friendlies, and with Kayrosh experimenting, new lineups, new players. And I hope he does, because otherwise, I mean, the starting 11 in the World Cup might be the same one as we saw against Syria. I hope not, but it just might be.
Matthew, is there anything you would like to add based off the comments of the guys, or what do you personally want to see?
Personally? No, I think, I mean, this is my own experience with, I mean, when I was younger, let's put it this way, Bobak knows it, you know, you are like putting all like wish lists of like players you would like to see and players you think should be in the team instead of others. The true vibe learned over time is, especially with national team games, is, you know, you have very little time to prepare and you take the players you know and you have trained with well and who are used to the system. So that's why maybe, like, you know, Ali Kerimi might not have a team, but he will be called up because he is part of Giroud's group for a long time. I think, honestly, we will probably not see more than 4 to 5 players added to the core of the team, and that will be mainly in the areas where we know we have problems, like midfield or defense. But we should really be like, I don't personally see like much more or much different players coming in, but Piero should really sticking to his to the squad we have. And yes, probably we will maybe see like a similar team to the one we saw against Syria start the World Cup. That's my belief. Maybe not with Dejaga starting, but that that's how I, from my own idea I have now in my head, think will be.
What do you make of the Jahanbakhsh situation? Do you see more or less the way I see it, that he hasn't hit the gears that he hits for his club? And why do you think that could be?
Yes, obviously, when you see him play for AZ, you know, he is, I don't want to say a totally different player, but, you know, he is a different player. I mean, you have it. I can put my finger on it, but you have it very often that, you know, if a team plays different in the way they approach a game, you know, it's a thing if you play with three in the front or if you play with a 4-2-3-1. Obviously, it's all different, and it's all, you know, depending on the approach and the roles a team player has to do. You know, I mean, I honestly watch too little of AZ to be, you know, able to analyze properly how Jahanbakhsh plays for AZ. But it's more related also to the way his other teammates are playing. Like Taremi, if Taremi plays, Taremi moves more forward, Jahanbakhsh has to keep it on the wing. Osmoun is a different type of player than the center forward he plays with at AZ. So these are all factors we have to keep in mind. You know, his right back in Team Melli is different than the right back at AZ. These are all factors that make the difference. So obviously, it would be great to make sure the potential and the multiplier factor of each player gets bigger in the team. But as long as Jahanbakhsh fulfills the role he is supposed to play in team, I'm okay with it. But it would be obviously great if he could contribute to the team's offense, because we always look at the way our defense has been playing, and this was great, but we have to also look at it that we scored like what, 8-9 goals in the whole qualification. So, you know, we're not a team that scores goals free flowingly and easily, and this might be a thing going to the World Cup when we have to come from behind. So yes, that's my opinion, basically.
Before we wrap up the pod, Pejman, if you wanted to add anything to what Bobak just said, and what do you hope to see from the Iranian Football Federation or Carlos Queiroz going down this road to Russia?
I hope that the Federation will listen to the national team coach Carlos Queiroz and his staff about their wishes and try to meet their expectations. If we have a federation that says that you want to go to the second round in the World Cup, then we need some proper preparations that are made by the federation, not by the coach. Actually, the coach is supposed to coach the team and tell them where to run and what to do, not run around and asking for favors from friends in South Africa and Portugal and Mozambique and whatever, just to make sure that they have a chance to prepare themselves. We will see plenty of fights and Queiroz talking bad about the federation, and the federation saying that they're doing what they can to support the team. But this is something we're used to now, so I don't think that we will see anything revolutionary. Queiroz knows what to do with the team, and the players respect him, and that's the most important thing by now. I mean, Iran is not the only team that have problem with preparation. There are other teams, poor teams, so to speak, as well, and that's our reality. So we just hope for the best, and maybe a good game in the World Cup could change all that.
Well, as always, I appreciate your thoughts. It was a pleasure, obviously, having you on, Matthew. We hope to have you on soon again. Thank you, guys, and for the viewers, as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Right now, joined with Arya Alaverdi. Arya, thank you for coming on Gold of Islam. I know it's been a long time coming, and how are you doing today?
Thanks, Pasha. Yeah, it's good, man. And just excited to be here. Excited to be able to talk to all the Iranian supporters and non-Iranian supporters, and hopefully we can discuss some things about Iranian football and come to some conclusions as well.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself. You've been supporting, I'm assuming, Team Meli all your life?
Yeah, so obviously I've been supporting Team Meli my whole life because obviously I'm Iranian. I was born in Scotland. My parents are from Iran. They've been here for over 30 years, but I speak Farsi fluently, so there's no, you know, different accent or anything like that. I speak Farsi like a normal Iranian. So other than that, in terms of football, you know, I've been coaching football for about 5 years. So I'm only 20 years old. So obviously you can say like 15, it was when I started out in school, and then I moved on to getting my licenses through the Scottish FA. And from there, I've been doing a lot of stuff, work with Park Thistle, which is one of the teams in the Scottish Premiership. So last year, I got an offer to coach with one of the grassroots teams in the youth academy of Park Thistle. So I've been doing that for a year now. I'm moving on to get my Scottish C license, which is like the equivalent of, like, I don't know, the English level 2 or... like UEFA, I don't have UEFA is level 2, whatever they have. So one below the UEFA B license. And hopefully next year I can go on to do my UEFA B license through the Scottish FA as well. But yeah, I've been coaching with them for a long time. And even last year I was in America for about 3 months. During the summer I was working with a company called Challenger Sports. And I was doing coaching for different various camps. Different like academies and clubs around the east coast of like the northeast, like in New York, Baltimore, yeah. Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, all those places around America, and I was coaching it for about 3 months, and hopefully I can go back again next summer and do the same thing, but maybe with like higher level camps and higher level clubs, just because I'm obviously gaining more qualifications. But yeah, other than that, I'm at university. Studying sports coaching, you know, and sports psychology, biomechanics. So I'm into sports, into football.
No, I appreciate the support, and I wish you all the best. So let's get into the gist of talking about the match that occurred yesterday. Very disappointing result, honestly.
Yeah, it was.
Something that probably not even the own Syrians would have believed in themselves. But I'm just going to ask you about like your initial thoughts on the lineup. Is that what you expected? And obviously... discussion we're going to be having as well is with, you know, how vital of a player Jalal Hosseini has been for a national team. Because if you look at when he wasn't playing, still poor Ali Ganji and Ansari looked out of depth. You saw the collaboration, the partnership wasn't there. And yeah. It just goes on to show you how vital of a person our captain is, and with him missing, and then we're going to talk about obviously Ryan Tafazoli, and with the lack of depth that we have in center backs, and that's the issue with Montez Riyad being as well, and Saida Zatolai being out, and Obi Demirayim being out in center mid. So Karish does have a lot of issues, and from your own point of view, where do you see it going?
The game last night, obviously a disappointing result. 2-2, we conceded two goals to unbeaten, or not unbeaten, but the games without conceding a goal, it stopped there. So they are a weaker side than Iran. And you were saying about the lineup. I was surprised that he put out, a strong lineup, but I was surprised that he put out players that played a game against South Korea, which South Korea is obviously a tough team to play against, and they ran so much in that game, especially having 10 men. So I was expecting him to maybe come with a team that's maybe a bit fresh, fresh legs, after running so much with 10 men on the pitch for almost one half. I was expecting him to maybe go with something that's a bit more fresh legs, a couple of players, Torabi. I was expecting actually Hariri to start in goals. Maybe I had a shuffle in defence as well. Maybe Kafuri coming on for Rezaian. So it could have been a lot of, change. But, he went with a strong team, his favourite team, as you can tell, with some of the names, Osmoun, etc. Ali Karimi didn't do that well either. So he came on with a strong team, but you can tell that they didn't really, they weren't, from the first whistle, they did actually struggle with the pace of the game. They were a bit slow getting out of the blocks, but they conceded two goals. We'll come on to that in a minute. You're right. It's a bad result for a good period of 10 games that we've played in the qualifiers. To come out with that 2-2, not great, but we'll need to move on from that.
Yeah, and just going to the gist of I just want to discuss firmly about Ashkan Dijaga, which is that's very surprising that he's still playing right now. Just shows you how big of a trust that Karish has with him, and even the bigger issue with this is it just shows you how big of a problem we have at number 10. Do you potentially seeing Saman Gudus filling up that role? Because it definitely seems like, even though he had his issues with a visa and stuff and he couldn't get any playing time for him to officially be a team Mendy player, but it sure seems like he's not going to ditch Iran, even if he gets a call-up from Sweden. And do you see him slotting in there?
Ashkan, he's a great player. We know he's a great player. He played in the Germany under-21s, So he's a good player. He's one of our best players still, even at his age. But yeah, you're right. He will get old. He's 31 now. Maybe 32 coming up in June, I think, something like that. So, he's a great player. I've seen him play at Sweden. He's actually quite similar to Dijaga in a lot of ways. He has that sort of, that physique, that stockiness that he brings to the game. Obviously right-footed, has a great shot on him, probably a bit quicker than Dijaga, and he also has a bit more balance as well. He's a bit shorter, he's about 5'9", he's a bit shorter, so he's a bit more balanced to the game. But yeah, I think he would be great. I actually think he would play out wide to start with for Iran. I feel like Karish will start to play him out wide, and then maybe as Shojai and Dijaga, as soon as they start to maybe peak off a little bit, he will move into the middle, and players like Torabi and Taremi will come back to the wing. I think that will maybe the way it will happen. Maybe not. Maybe he will play a number 10 straight away, and we will just see a winger coming in instead. So, I think he's a lot of options with him in the team. Hopefully he comes back against Russia and Togo, actually. We've got a friendly against Togo now. Apparently that's what Mehdi Taj said this morning. We've got a friendly against Togo. So you could play two friendlies coming up soon in October. So I think it's a good chance for him to get involved in the national team and play some games under his belt. But back to Dijaga, a great game yesterday. I think he had a good game against South Korea too. Mm-hmm. I think he did well. He worked hard. Obviously, with 10 men, he's always going to come off at one point because you can't have an attacking midfielder. You need to bring a striker on to have that focal point up front. But he had a strong game against Syria. He was probably the only player who actually showed, maybe with Haisafi as well, that really bit of energy, because maybe he came off against South Korea a bit earlier on, a bit of energy about him. But he showed a lot of skill, that situation where he passed the ball to Sadler Osmond just before it. He did a bit of an unbelievable bit of skill. You know, he took the player on to his left foot, round him, and then passed it through. Unfortunately, Osmond missed the chance, but you know, he's a great player, and he's one of those guys who can create. He obviously had an assist for Osmond as well, so from the corner. So you know, he's one of those players who can unlock defences, but he can also be a vital player physically. He can impose himself physically, and he did do that. He used a lot of his shoulder barges, etc., in the field, and he looked good. He looked good for his age. He looked really, really good. Hopefully, he can get a team soon as well. He get a club soon, and he'll just become a bit better than he already is just now. What kind of form he's in just now?
Before we speak about Ryan Tafazoli, I just wanted to talk to you about the whole Ali Reza Behramvan situation, and it seems like Ali Reza is going very well in Sweden. In my personal viewpoint, I just don't think Behramvan has been tested. And when he has been tested, even at a club level, he's given few blunders. I just see he's very prone to making errors. And we saw yesterday, even though...
I want to discuss about that, actually, the goals that he conceded, both of them.
Do you see Arias earning his
place? Yeah. Like? I hope so. I really hope so. I think he's clearly. I mean, his team are level cohesive. First of all, his team are the lowest team in Sweden in the table. But for me, kind of in some ways, for a goalkeeper, especially if I was coaching a goalkeeper, the only positive you would sort of say, if your goalkeeper is doing well and your team's bottom of the table, it means that your goalkeeper is getting a lot of practice. He's getting a lot of shots in his goal. So you know, if his goalkeeper is doing well, but his team's doing bad, maybe you can see then it's his team's fault. His goalkeeper is it's not his goalkeeper's fault. So his goalkeeper's doing well, that means he's doing well. So hopefully he can do well for Iran if he gets another chance. I hope he does, because just if we talk about the goals that Behramvan conceded yesterday, his first goal that he conceded, I was actually looking at the replay about an hour earlier this morning. I wanted to speak about it a little bit. See, when the free kick came in from Omar Alsoma, you can tell that Omar Alsoma is using the Cristiano Ronaldo style. He's going to come in for a knuckleball, like free kick style, so the ball dips early. And if you watch the replay from the angle where the goalkeeper is standing, you can see that Behramvan is standing literally like maybe a tiny little step away from his goal line, which if from a coach's point of view, if my goalkeeper was doing that, and I knew that the player was going to hit a knuckleball free kick, I would be shouting at him to tell him, you have to come at least a little bit further off your line so that you can deal with the drop. Because the ball is going to drop earlier when it's a knuckleball technique.
Right.
That's one of the things that you have to do. You must come a little bit, you must gamble, or you must actually read the player's run up to the ball, how he's going to approach it, and you must read the path of the ball early, because it's going to drop early. And if you see the replay, the way the ball went to his hands, it dropped in his hands and it bounced up again, and then the rebound came in. But if he'd been a bit, and he's actually reaching for the ball forward, if you look at the replay, he was reaching forward to get the bounce, which is wrong. He shouldn't be doing that. He should be going to his side to hit the ball to his side. But because he was reaching forward, the ball went forward and bounced up, and the player got the rebound and they conceded the goal. So his positioning was wrong. His positioning was wrong. And in the second goal, we can come back to that if you want to speak about it, if you have anything to say about the first goal.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, what can you say, honestly? It was two goals that were very, very poor, and both of them were mistakes. Something that you would expect from pretty much a goalkeeper that is right now.
Yeah.
You know, trying to prove himself in front of Kerosh, and now that he actually got tested, and he unfortunately failed very miserably.
Exactly.
And but it's good, because this competition is going to actually make Behramvan much more of a better keeper now, in my eyes. But
definitely.
Now let's talk about you know, the lack of depth we have in center back. It's a main issue. Murtaza Pourali Genci has been solid alongside Jalal Hosseini. Montazeri has been solid alongside Jalal Hosseini. He's such a vital player for us. The big issue that we saw even the last two matches was how Ansari looked out of place. He got subbed out, but because of the choice, obviously, Kerosh has and Mortis, because he's been playing for us, he let him play, and then he brought another center back in, Purgas, and he wasn't even the best of whatever. So we do have an issue in center backs. And a player that is a friend of ours, somebody I know personally, somebody that I've actually watched a few times play, is Ryan Tafazoli. heavily linked to Team Melli. There's some things I can't say about him personally, just because of the respect I have for the national team. However, he's getting monitored, and there's no question about that. But coming off of you, obviously, you know, living in Scotland, and I'm not sure if you've actually ever watched, you know, Ryan play for Peterborough United, but I know somebody that you highly, highly rate. Tell us if you've ever watched Ryan, and do you potentially see him, Karish, giving him that call up? He has the physique as what Karish has been seeking, as a, you know, Karish always wants a player that has the physique, the height, the presence, and Ryan fits into that criteria. He's 6'5". Even could play in the middle of the field, which he used to play, but now he's slotting back at center back. So he has everything he wants, and he's a versatile. And as we know, Carlos Queiroz loves players that are versatile. So asking you again, Ario, is that have you ever watched Ryan closely, and where do you see him playing?
Yeah, so obviously, I think we all, I don't know if everyone watched it, but a lot of people watched the game against Chelsea last season in the FA Cup. I don't know if you watched it, Pasha, but... Yeah, he in that game he struggled. You know, in that game he struggled quite a lot. But that's a game against Chelsea. You know, that's the big dogs. You're giving, that's like feeding, you know, something big to whatever. I don't know what the saying is, but you know what I mean. But you know, if you watch him in his league, in the League Two, obviously in the UK we don't really have coverage of the League Two that often. Sorry, in the League One. In the League One that often. You have like the highlights, you get highlights of the weekend games every night. But that's just the highlights. You don't get any like full replays. But I've watched him, you know, closely, you know, as much as I can. I watched him with his highlights on YouTube as well. I watched that game against Chelsea, so I saw bits and bobs of his game. Obviously, being from the UK, I understand the British game a bit more because of, you know, I've coached in it as well. I've coached in British games, so I know what I know what they expect of their players. Just back to Tavares. Tavares, you know, he will offer the national team, I would say, three main sort of areas that he would improve in their national team. I would say the first area is probably tactical. The tactical would be like providing opportunities to score goals from set pieces, and also his height, you know, his physique, and also he will nullify the other team taking a set piece. So, you know, he'll stop with the defence from launching big free kicks or corners into the box, and he'll maybe head them away. You know, we'll have a much lower percentage of set pieces conceded with a taller player in the team. That's common sense. That's going to happen. But that's tactical. You know, technically, I would say that's the second point would be, you know, as you said, Pasha, you said that he played in midfield. So in Southampton, which is a great youth team, you know, they've obviously produced Oxlade-Chamberlain, just to name a few. Ward-Prowse. Yeah, exactly. So, he played in midfield. I think he was their captain. I'm not sure if he was their captain. I think that's what I heard. I think he was their captain or something like that in their under-19s or something like that. And he's like a defensive midfielder, holding midfielder back in the day. And, you know, that just shows he's comfortable on the ball. So technically, he's comfortable on the ball to pass the ball. He knows how to bring the ball out of defence effectively, understands, you know, how to play it out, start an attack from the back. So that's important. You know, Queiroz wants that. He wants someone who can play from the back and build forward. Obviously, he's left-footed as well. We saw that with Ansari. Ansari, you know, I'm actually disappointed because I thought he'd be a good player. You know, I watched him for Persepolis. I thought he'd be okay for us, but I don't know. He struggled. He did struggle. It's in South Korea in the first half. He struggled. Syria, he took him off. That just means that he really, really struggled against Syria. So he brought Prugas for Ansari. I mean, that just shows how bad he played. That he put him on. So yeah, you know, I don't know how long he's going to be playing the team for. The third point I was going to put for Tavares really is physical. That's obviously, you just know that, because if you watch the game against South Korea, Korea put on their big tall guy, Kim Shin-wook, is that right?
Yeah,
Kim Shin, they put him on, and obviously Syria had Omar Alsoma, two massive physical, you know, giants playing up front, and they did really, Soma, you know, he killed Ansari. You know, he was destroyed. If you watch replays, Ansari struggled a lot. Even Pralli Ganji started struggling a lot against him. So And then we have Artem Zhuba for Russia coming up in October, and we also have Adebayor for Togo. So two, again, massive guys that we have to try and nullify in some respect. And he has that build, that physical frame that will stop attacks coming in from high balls, set pieces. And weaker teams, like Togo is a weaker team than Iran, you have to admit that. They're going to try and play that ball to Adebayor. We know that. They're going to try and play that ball to Adebayor 100 times during the game. And if we don't have someone defending against Adebayor against Togo or whoever, let's say we play against Lukaku in Belgium in the World Cup, you know, we're going to struggle. Because Hosseini and Montez are getting old. They're not going to jump as high as they used to when they were younger. And Purali Ganji, he's good at jumping, but jumping doesn't always help. You need someone who can stand still and just impose physically. That's different from jumping to win a header, because it's got a different technique to it. So that's not going to help so much. But, you know, we'll see. If he comes to the national team, I think he'll be a big improvement in the defence.
You know, fantastic points, and obviously knowing how well of a clean manager and very organized manager Carlos Queiroz is, hopefully the Federation will, you know, give him what he seeks. But obviously, it depends on the group who is Iran. I just want to talk a little bit about the future for the World Cup. And obviously, we don't know who's going to be in our group. However, just asking you just from, you know, just based off of now, do you potentially seeing Queiroz changing his system depending on, you know, the teams? Or do you just see him that he's going to use the same team he has right now with the same lineup, and it's just going to be different tactical formation as opposed to, you know, basing it off of who we're going to play, if that makes sense?
Well, I mean, if we get a really weak team in our in the World Cup, which is unlikely, but if we do, then you know what's going to happen. Weak teams are going to try and score goals against stronger teams usually by three ways. You know, they're going to try and use, let's say, set pieces is one of their main ways to score a goal, high balls, and like counterattacks. You know, they're the three ways they're going to try and score goals. And if we are, you know, if we're being lazy, counterattacks are going to happen. If we don't have a tall player, we're going to miss headers and set pieces and high balls. So we need to cover those gaps first of all. In terms of, you know, who's going to pick for the national team, you know, I know Queiroz. You know, I know he's a great coach. I know he knows his team really well. He's been there for what, 6 years now? 6 years, 7 years? Yeah. I don't know. But he's a fantastic coach.
He's an Iranian. He's not Portuguese anymore. He's an Iranian.
No, yeah, he's Iranian. Give him his citizenship, man. Give him his passport, man. Jesus. Give him a statue next to the stadium. No, but listen, he's a great coach, and we know that. You know, otherwise we wouldn't have had no goals conceded. We wouldn't have had no goals conceded up till now, up till Syria. So, and no losses. You know, so you know, he's a great coach, and I know and I respect his decisions. You know, I'm not gonna bash him for making a decision, because I'm not a UEFA pro licensed coach. You know, he's a pro licensed coach. You know, who am I to tell him he's doing it wrong? But if I was to give my opinion, then I would say, yeah, I think, you know, maybe he should change maybe one or two things that, you know, from that game. Hariri, I definitely think, should deserve a chance. And a few players were out of his hand. You know, some Angolans couldn't play yesterday. But hopefully in Russia, you know, we see Tafazoli and some Angolans maybe get involved. We see, hopefully, Said Atullahi's red card doesn't keep him out of the first game. If it does, then that's a shame. Because if it was me, I wouldn't call him up. Because there's no point having a player who can't play the first game. Do you know, because that might be the most important game. And the next two games might be the hardest games ever. And we can't even play a player like Atullahi anymore, because we need someone who's a bit more physical and a bit more defensively sound, like Chesney, for example. And if we can't play Atullahi in the next two games, so why should we even bring him along? You know what I mean? So if, you know, he has to evaluate that. And, you know, up front, you got tons of options. You got the four strikers that we all know who are fantastic. You've even got Kaveh Rezai, who probably deserves to be called up at this stage. And, you know, you got five strikers who deserve to be called up to the national team. And that's crazy to think that. You know, if you look at Brazil, they probably only got two strikers to call up for the national team. Probably only got Gabriel Jesus, and Firmino is not even a striker. You know, they don't even have any strikers, but we've got five strikers. How crazy is that right now?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. It's just the depth that Kerosh has implemented, and it's made these players, want to go more, move overseas to prove themselves. Even Schaub's idea, if I'm not mistaken, the former Paris Police player, that right now I believe he's in Iceland or something. It just goes on to show you these players. Even Barzai, So.
Yeah, definitely. So, he's gone to Turkey. Yeah, was Manly for exactly, another player, six strikers, and even Sajjad Shahbazadeh, even him, he did really well against Galatasaray, and he's obviously out of the picture now, but he was one of those players who could have got called up, and he didn't even get called up. That just shows that there was so much depth at the time that he didn't even get called up, so it's it's a good time for Iranian football, and we should all be proud of the national team. We should all respect Kerosh's decisions and just enjoy the football.
Arya, we appreciate obviously your time and stuff. So I don't know how long you've been supporting Gold Bazan and whatnot, but I appreciate you giving us your time and always supporting us.
Thank you.
And as always, more than always, happy to have you on.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.